Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10th episode of the Strength Academy podcast. This is Mundo here, once again joined by Grayson.
Hey guys, we've officially made it. 10 episodes. That's... I mean, we only have to do what?
1,000 more?
1,000 more, and we'll almost be tied with Joe Rogan. It's great.
Yeah, so a long road ahead of us, but we'll see if we can get there week by week. All right, so... this week's topic of discussion was some of the approaches that we wanted to take or talk about in coaching, what our mindset is as coaches, how we approach what we want to teach athletes and what we want their mindsets to be, and just in general, like what we think about how we can equip them to be better athletes and better people in general. So
yeah, absolutely, man. So yeah, I guess, well, where do we start? There's a lot that we can go into with kind of coaching outlook, but I think one of the big ones for me is I don't want to have to be a dictator within the gym. So I want to provide guidance and teach people, but I don't want to have to be on top of people all the time. I like to let them kind of have a little bit of freedom, you know, where it's not, for the next 15 minutes, you will do 5 sets of SOTS presses. And then for the next 15 minutes after that, so like that really rigid, you know, I don't like to feel like I'm forcing people to do something, because all of our people are there because they want to be there.
Yeah, and that's... they're all grown-ups too, most of them. We don't really have any like really young athletes, so you kind of have to let them figure out on their own that how hard they want to push themselves. You know, we'll give them the, you know, the programming, we'll give them the tools that they need in the workout, like as far as cues and corrections and things like that, but they have to decide how intense they're going to make their lifts. Like if they feel slow and lazy and it's showing up, you know, I'd be like, hey, you got to lift like you mean it, but that's not going to make them lift like they mean it. They have to want to do it too.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want. Is I don't like being in a position where I feel like I'm providing the motivation for the activity or for learning this or lifting in the session. I like to feel like I'm there to... the way I think of it, I guess, is that I'm there to help because you want to do this. So I'm going to treat you like you want to do this. And that means I am going to tell you what I think you should do to warm up. But I'm going to kind of make... I operate under the assumption that you're doing that. If we've had that discussion and it's like, hey, these are the stretches I think you should do after... this is what I like to see in a warm-up, this is what I like to see with the bar, and we've had those conversations with pretty much everybody several times, and we kind of, you know, especially when they're new, it's teaching them how to do those things. But if it's not your, you know, second week at the gym, I still expect you to be warming up the way that we talked about when you first came to the gym. You know, like, I think... you know, it's the idea of, you know, not babysitting people, treating them like they're adults, because they are. Like, I have respect for them, so I'm going to treat them the way that I would want to be treated, which is I wouldn't want to be feeling like someone's being condescending or babysitting me. It's like, nah, man, I know how to stretch my hamstrings. Let me do my thing.
Yeah, and the same thing applies to, like, when they're done working out, and they say, well, I'm going to go stretch at home. Yeah, that's fine. You can do that. But make sure you do that.
Yeah, and I'm trusting that you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, if you're going to cut that short because you have to go or there's somewhere else you're going to have to be later on, yeah, that's fine. But I'm not going to show up at your house and be like, hey, did you stretch? Or I'm not going to text you an hour later and be like, hey, did you stretch? Like, you need to take care of that on your own. And it goes back to... the athletes need to take some responsibility for their own progress as well. Like, you can't just say, oh, well, I didn't do it because nobody was around to make me do it. Like,
yeah.
We're not, like you said, we're not dictators. I'm not going to tell you exactly what you need to do, when you need to do it every time. You know, we'll lay out, and even with programming, it's not a dictatorial thing.
Yeah, we have a little wiggle room.
Yeah, like if things are feeling not great, you know, bump the weights down, bump the percentages down. If things are feeling really good, maybe, you know, round off the number. You know, if it's 87, maybe go up to 90. That's fine. But I'm not going to say you have to do this percentage, this many reps, you know, of this exercise, and that's it. Like, there's no compromise.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, they're, you know, essentially hiring us to help them get better. So it's going to be, you know, a partnership, a compromise with that.
Right.
Because, you know, if it says, oh, you have to train Monday through Thursday and Saturday, but you work long hours on Thursdays, I'm not going to say, too bad you don't get to do that workout. You're not committed enough. You know, like, so we have that set up where people can train 3 days a week, 4 days a week, or move those days around, where we have some people that start on Tuesday and end on Sunday, and we have some people that start the week on Monday and end on Saturday, and some people that do 3 days a week and start Monday and Friday. So, you know, it's not, I don't like the idea of being so rigid that you can't be realistic in accommodating people, because people have stuff going on. They have a lot to deal with. So kind of trusting them to get the work in and then guiding them and helping them with their technique and giving them advice about how they should be doing things, but not, you know, penalizing them for not being able to train on Wednesdays at 6, you know?
Yeah, it's like, we're not going to bench you because you didn't show up to practice. This isn't high school basketball.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what you're saying, like, these people want to be here. Like, they're not drafted into the weightlifting club. You know, it's not an elective they take in high school. You know, they come here, they train, because this is something that they like doing, they want to do. And so when we talk to them and we offer them our advice and our guidance, that's all it is advice and guidance. And they have to choose whether they want to follow up on it, take it into account, and implement it into their mindset of weightlifting or whatever their, you know, interest in fitness is. And I think that, so when it comes to coaching, you know, why do people get coaches? They get coaches because they're interested in a subject that they don't know very well themselves, or that somebody else is more knowledgeable at, right? So like, if I wanted to get nutrition coaching, like, is it because I don't know that much about nutrition? No, I know some, but there's somebody that I can talk to that'll keep me accountable, that'll help me reach my goals and accomplish the things that I want to, tailor it, you know, more toward what my what I'm trying to achieve. And for a coach, like, you, the client came to you, the person came to you because they're trying to get something that you have that they don't, whether that's knowledge, experience. You know, that, to me, that's why, like, coaching matters. Like, you can lift in a garage by yourself and you can get so far, but eventually there's going to be flaws in your technique, or there's going to be holes in your programming that aren't being, addressed because you don't have somebody watching you. If it's just you, yourself in your garage and your video camera, if you even video yourself, like, how do you gain that coach's eye?
Yeah, and I think the, you know, by yourself in garage example is a good instance of how not having a coach or not having guidance is kind of detrimental, because you could waste a ton of time being like, oh, I need to get my lower back stronger because my back keeps rounding in the squat. And if you haven't been around a lot of this stuff, it seemed like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If you're going down into the squat in your backgrounds, maybe your low back's weak. That's a pretty rational thing to assume. But it could be that you spent 4 months trying to strengthen your lower back when what you really needed to do was stretch your hips. So it eliminates, like, you can make progress on your own, but it's going to take a lot more trial and error than if you come in and work with us, where we've maybe dealt with that exact problem before. Maybe we've seen somebody go through the exact same thing or something similar enough that we can weed out 50% of the potential things and start dialing in. And it basically just cuts down the time to figure out what your actual mistake is. And it's not just on you to trial and error. And that's, you know, a part of its guidance. You know, if somebody has flexibility restrictions, we're going to assign stretches. But when I assign stretches, I expect them to do them.
Yeah.
And I'll operate under the impression that that's exactly what's going on because this person wants to get better.
Yeah. And so with coaching, like, what is a coach? Like, what do you think a coach should be? Because, like, for me, I played basketball in high school, and my coach was just, like, this guy that would yell at us and tell us to run laps if we did with something he didn't like. If we were playing a little dirty and fouling each other a little too much, you know, he'd make us all do, you know, burpees and suicides and things like that. So, like, it was always this guy that pretty much just yelled at you, made you do things that weren't really that fun, and decided whether you got to play in the game or not. You know, so coaching, is it being knowledgeable? Is it being, so for me, like, coaching is about relationships. It's about being knowledgeable, and it's about helping people achieve what they want to achieve. And that's how I approach it, because I don't want to yell at somebody because they're not doing something right. Will I stop them from doing something? Yes. If they're trying to do 90% and it looks like garbage and they're going to drop it on their head, I'm going to tell them to stop. But do I want them to hit that 90%? Yes. But I want them to do it technically correct, and I want them to do it, you know, to the best of their ability, not just throwing it up over their head and praying that, you know, it gets up there. So for me, like, I think developing a relationship where they trust what you're telling them to do, where they know that I know what I'm telling them is going to help them, and that when I tell them not to do something, that it's not because I'm trying to hold them back, but it's because I'm trying to make them better.
Yeah, and I think that's very similar to the way I think about it, because there's a lot of different coaching styles, and the yell at people and you pick the team is kind of that dictatorial style where there's the coach and there's the team, and there's a separation there where the coach says jump and the team says how high. And while that can be an effective strategy for some people, I've always felt like you do want to make it about building the trust and the relationships with the individuals, because at the end of the day, you know, we're not doing a team sport, so we're trying to make the individual able to feel and react and move, and let us kind of make those backroom decisions of, hey, this is where we're going to keep you on track for warm-ups. But it's not a, you know, forcing you to do something. It's, we're on your team. We're there to help you. So I kind of look at it as, you know, it's not like I'm owed anything. It's that I'm there trying to help people out because I like doing it.
Right.
And basically trying to get, I think that one of the things that I think I want people to get out of, you know, the experience being coached at our gym is really learning something about what they're trying to do, which is why I'm always thrilled when people ask why we're doing something.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as a coach, if you're telling someone to do an exercise or to change a position and they ask you why, you better have a reason. And it better be a rational one and better be a good reason,
yeah.
You know, because they trust you. And if you're saying, I want you to start with your hips low because I've seen these pictures on Hook Grip and it looks like that's what you're supposed to do, that's not a very good answer.
No, it's not.
So I think, you know, being trustworthy is a really important part of being a coach. because if your athletes don't trust you, then they're not going to take what you say seriously, and nobody's going to get any better. So I think it's really good when our athletes do ask us, hey, why are we doing this? Why do you think I should switch to this style of jerk? Or why is my start position off? Not misleading them or just cheering your way through a fitness class saying, great job, everybody, when something was off. You know, if something is off, you need to address it. Because trying to spare someone's feelings about it is not going to benefit them in the long run towards accomplishing whatever it is that they want to do with lifting. So you have to have that honesty where you can say, well, that was pretty off and we're going to work on that. But you don't have to scream at them about it. You like, I always like to keep things, you know, either sometimes maybe sarcasm, but, you know, usually just, I mean, that was like, it's that, find something that they did right and then give the adjustment, you know? Yeah. I liked the intensity there, but I need you to be a little bit better timing with the lockout. So you kind of let them know what they're doing correct and then let them know what to fix. And you need to have trust to make that kind of communication work. And if you're always saying, that was perfect, then they're going to know that you're lying at a certain point because they can feel that it's not perfect.
Or they miss it. They miss it. Oh, that was great.
And we're not a cheer squad, basically.
Yeah, we're not a cheer squad. And it goes both ways. Like, as a coach, I want to be able to trust you as the athlete to do what you're supposed to be doing and to listen, right? So, like, if I write a program for you and then you just go off and do whatever you want to do anyway, then what was the point of me writing a program for you? Or if I give you a correction and you just do the same thing, like, not because you didn't have a bodily awareness of it, but because you just didn't listen, then, you know, why are you wasting my time? And the thing is like, people, not everybody's coachable. And sometimes people are egotistical or they want to do things their way. And those are the people that don't stay very long because they're going to do things their way. So no matter what you tell them, no matter how much you try to help them, they're just going to do what they want to do anyway. And those aren't the people that you want to be coaching, because eventually they're just going to blow up or crumble, fall apart, and then they're going to leave anyway. So it's not that we're trying to, we can't work with those people, but if you've ever coached anybody and then you have a person that you're trying to help and they just don't listen, it's like talking to your crackhead cousin. You know, you want to help him and you want to, you know, get him to a good place, but he loves crack too much, so he's just going to keep smoking it. He doesn't want to listen to you. He's got to do it for himself. So, and it's kind of the same way with athletes. Athletes are not crackheads, not usually, unless just they take three pre-workout scoops of C4. But you know, they have to want to be better too, and they have to be willing to take that feedback and that guidance.
And I know that there's a lot of coaches that, again, are really, really strict and regimented, where it's like, if you deviate from the program or have something come up where it's like, hey, my friend wants me to do this CrossFit event with them, that's not a place that I don't want to be so strict that it's, no, you're off the team if you're outside of, you know, what we're supposed to be doing. I think, you know, if you've got some side goals that you want to run and you're, you know, working for a race or working for a CrossFit competition on the side, if you ask my opinion, I'm going to say, well, I think that your lifts might be a little bit harder that week, or hey, here's how you can move things around so that you're not overtraining. But I don't think it's my place to tell you, no, don't do that thing. Because, again, I'm helping you out. So if you have something come up where you're like, hey, I want to run a 5K. I just feel like I'm in better shape when I'm doing some cardio. Let's talk about it and we can figure out how to make it negatively impact things the least or not negatively impact anything. So I think that, you know, working with people for where they're at. You know, if somebody wants to do some CrossFit on the side, will it make it harder to get their snatch technique 100% dialed in because they're giving up training time for this other thing? Yeah. But if they're okay with that, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but at the same time, like if you have a lifter that's going to a national level competition, right? Like the AO finals or nationals, like don't ask to go do a tough mutter. Like, hey coach, I'm going to go do this tough mutter like a week before AO finals. And then you come back and your arm's broken. And it's like, oh God, like why?
So there is that, that, you know, spread. So if your goal is to do some American Open Series and hit a local meet 2 to 3 times a year, and just you like lifting, it's fun to get stronger, then I'm just gonna help you kind of get that advice. But you know, if one of our top lifters is like, can I do Fran 5 days before the American Open? No, you can't.
No.
But you know, if they do it, I'm not gonna burn that bridge entirely and be like, you didn't listen to me. I'm gonna, you know, people need to make decisions for themselves, and if they need to do something that throws themselves off to learn that lesson, because again, I don't see myself as a person who can just tell you exactly what you need to do. I can offer insight and I can offer advice, but it's up to our athletes if they take that advice, and we can't make them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so it's just, it goes back to like, do they want to compete at that level? And maybe just remind them, hey, you know, you've been working all this time for 6 months for the American Open Finals, and you want to do a max deadlift competition a week before, like, probably not a great idea. And if you get hurt, I'm going to be like, well, I guess you're not going to American Open Finals. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to be like, well, you're off the team. Like, well, I guess you're just not going.
Like, I guess we'll get it in next year.
You got your plane ticket. You can just come help out, I guess, if you want. But yeah, I mean, so you, they're, like I said, it goes back to them being adults, what they want. You can't stop them from living their life, because, I mean, if their life doesn't revolve around weightlifting, they're going to choose to do other things.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's right as a coach to feel betrayed or penalized because like somebody went and did a like an Orange Theory class.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm not gonna chew you out for that. If you felt like going and doing some Orange Theory, do it. Like, it's fine. It's,
and you'll miss them.
It's not so dire, you know.
Yeah, and you miss when they're not there, and you know you want to see them and watch them continue to develop. It's just, yeah, they have their own things sometimes.
Yeah, so I think another thing that I kind of think about with, you know, what am I trying to kind of get people to believe and to think and to do when they're at the gym as a coach? And one of those is, you know, I really like to, as people start to get more consistent with their technique, before immediately just throwing a cue out or saying, here's exactly what you did wrong, I like to ask them, did you feel what happened there? I like to get them to be thinking about what they're doing. Like trying to really get them to feel and to understand the snatch and the clean and jerk, and to really know what they're shooting for. And I think that's important because as a coach, like, you don't want to make all of your athletes so dependent on you that they can't decide what the next appropriate weight should be, or that they can't self-diagnose a little bit. Because if you're in a busy training room, you might not have eyes on every single rep that you do. You know, we might be talking to somebody else about something while you did your set. And if you are better at feeling, oh, when it feels like that, the bar went forward, you know, and you can kind of self-diagnose. So I think a really important thing for coaches to do is, it goes along with the explaining why you're doing an exercise, But checking in with athletes and making sure that, you know, it's like, hey, did you feel what happened on that one? Can you, like, what do you think happened? And then if they're correct, telling them so, and if not, being like, well, sort of, but here's what I was thinking.
Right.
Because you want them to, you know, develop a certain amount of confidence in themselves to, on those days, if they have to come in and train when nobody's around, they at least understand the intent of what they're doing. They understand why the program is structured that way. They know how to do the exercise, and they know how to diagnose it. So I think that we, as coaches, need to be teaching people about the lifts, not just critiquing their form and moving it on. Because I think the better they understand what we're trying to do, the better their lifts are going to be in the long run.
Yeah. And you kind of have to be careful with who you start doing that with, because not everybody's to the point where they can take that question and give you a good response and not overthink it. Because there's some people, if you ask them, hey, what went wrong with that lift, they'll just, like, it'll throw everything off the, it, like, the wagon will lose all the wheels.
Yeah.
And they'll just be overthinking everything, like, oh, well, you know, was I too forward? Did I get my knees out of the way? Like, you'll see it happen, like, where you just ask them that question and they won't be able to focus on anything. So if you have a lifter that is experienced in kind of doing that already, or you've been, like, grooming them to have that mindset of, oh, I did kind of feel that go forward, and they can give you that feedback and not overthink it, then they're headed in the right direction. And so, like, I like the idea of athletes almost being autonomous, right? So eventually I want to make myself obsolete as a coach, to where I'm just managing your mental state and your progress in the grand scheme of things. Because if you know how to self-diagnose, if you know how to, you know, motivate yourself, if you know how to stick to the plan and do what you're supposed to, then my job as a coach is going to get easier, because I'll just have to remind you what you need to do. You know, I won't have to sit there for hours with you and correct you over and over and over again. So I like when people become self-aware of, you know, their different aspects of their training. So, you know, if you tell them, or if they tell you, oh, I was a little bit forward on that one, wasn't I? And then I was like, yes, you were. So next time, you know, shift your weight back just a little bit on the start, right off the floor. And then they'll do the correction. But they knew something was off. And that's really good. I like when they can develop that awareness.
And I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like the ability to kind of feel what's going on just comes from time.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do a lot of snatches before you can tell exactly what happened in something that has so many moving parts and it happens in such a short period of time. So I think that it's, you know, good when people are starting out to make it really clear how we want them to do things, and to be really on top of, well, and we're always striving to get people to have the best technique they can, but making sure that that's a very big goal in the beginning, and that they understand the mechanics of what's going on, at least in a way that, you know, they don't have to understand lever arms and force production, but they need to understand that, you know, at this point you're maneuvering under, this is when your arms lock, this is when your feet land, this is the position you're supposed to be in. And once they start kind of really understanding those things, that's when you can start, you know, introducing kind of higher order thinking. Like, so maybe showing them, instead of immediately asking a beginner what went wrong, because they won't really know, maybe show them, hey, your shoulder position was off in the squat, and you see when I move my shoulder here, the bar drifts forward. That's what happened. So when your shoulder moves, the bar moves, and you start introducing those ideas, and then once they're more experienced and a little more comfortable, you can say, hey, what did that feel like? And they'll be like, did my shoulder move? That kind of felt like that the last time we had this conversation. And I think that, you know, having conversations with people about their lifting and, you know, kind of continually reminding them of the basic principles of what we're trying to do gets them to develop that kind of independence where it's not so dependent on I need feedback every time.
Right. And yeah, so I really like the idea of developing athletes that know what they're doing, and you know, if they can explain it to somebody else, then that means they understand the concept well enough themselves. And so explaining things to them and helping them grow their thought processes about lifting and their technique just helps everybody in general. So one thing I wanted to ask you is we both coach and we both train. So some coaches don't train anymore, right? So they just focus on the athletes. And I do believe that athletes come first. And in our case, we're both still trying to lift ourselves and compete every now and then. So how do you manage coaching and training yourself?
Well, so for me, the last, you know, definitely the last couple of years, the focus has been nearly entirely on doing the coaching side. And especially since we've opened the gym this year, it's been, you know, pretty busy. And so what I do is I don't train as often as I used to. I used to try to train 5 or 6 days a week. And I've really had to take a step back and kind of go back to just 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, picking things that I can get done in about an hour and a half, but making the quality of those sessions a lot higher. So basically just not doing junk volume. You know, if it's what's been really helpful for me is keeping things really basic in my own programming, like not trying to do anything crazy or fancy. It's just getting regular practice in with the lifts and, you know, saving the most of my mental energy to go into the programs for our lifters and actually not being so tired from the end of a 3-hour workout that I can't even coach that evening. So that's been a big thing for me, is just dialing back the number of training days. And I've actually continued to make progress just fine with that. And I think that it ended up being the right decision to just kind of dial it back a little bit, so that one, I recover better from the training, but two, I'm more alert and I have more energy when we're coaching, and I'm not mentally exhausted from trying to cram everything into a day.
I think for myself, I have a little more time than Grayson does. But I like training by myself. I don't have a whole lot of distractions. I can listen to whatever I want. And part of that is also because I don't have to focus on somebody else training when I'm doing my own. And for me, that's the line that Grayson doesn't really have that I do, is that Grayson always wants to coach, and even if he's training. And for myself, I just want to focus on my training. Like, if I'm constantly being distracted by somebody else that's lifting at the same time as me, and if I see something, I'll say, you know, what I think they should be doing, or like I give them a correction, but I don't want to continually be watching them while I'm training. Part of that goes back to I'm still trying to compete. I'm still trying to do, you know, accomplish some things. So when I work out at a specific time, I usually work out in the morning by myself, and that's ideal because nobody's there, and then I don't have to feel like I'm neglecting somebody, because if they're there and they think I'm there, like, I'm not there to coach. That's why we have specific hours.
Yeah.
And a lot of coaches are like that. Like Ursula, she'll show up to her gym, be there for 2 hours, and then leave.
If
she trains, I don't think she's like doing a bunch of other stuff on the side. Like, she's just training. Like, she's just doing her squats or whatever. So multitasking for a lot of coaches, that's why a lot of them choose not to do both anymore. That way they just focus on coaching.
Yeah.
They don't consider themselves competitive athletes. Some of them might still train, but it's not always the case. And that's probably where Grayson and I have the biggest separation as far as coaching and training goes, is Grayson is, the athletes always come first. And for me, I'm Grayson's the head coach, and I'm always assisting him, and my training is important to me as well, though. So for me, I'm still focusing on training and trying to compete and do some things, and the athletes still come first for me, but only when I'm there to coach, not while I'm training. And you know, some people might not agree with that, but that's just how I look at it.
Well, no, and I think that's totally fair. And I mean, that's kind of where, you know, having, you know, me as the primary one is, you know, I am okay with trying to do a little bit of that multitasking. So if I'm, you know, trying to get a workout in, you know, 2 hours before practice starts, but somebody's there a little bit early, I might get a little distracted and a little bit off sometimes, you know, just like taking a break to talk to them about what we're doing that week. But overall, I mean, I like competing, and I want to continue to compete at the highest level I can, and, you know, do at least a few competitions a year. But I mean, at this point, a big motivator for me is I keep training because, one, I want to still be an example to our athletes. Like, oh, why would I listen to you? You don't even squat.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important thing. But also, you know, I train to maintain body composition, and I train because I just genuinely love doing the lifts. Like, I think it's a lot of fun, and it keeps me, you know, level-headed. Like, it's a emotional release for me, is kind of like, you know, if I'm angry or bitter, I'm not going to coach very well if I'm all stressed out and tight because I haven't been able to lift. So it improves my mood and allows me to be a better coach, because I feel like if I'm training hard, or as hard as I can realistically, and that's sometimes broken up with helping other people out while I'm lifting, that's fine with me, because one of the main priorities of training for me is just remembering what it's like to be an athlete. And, you know, it's like, oh man, this is really hard. And I think that if your lifters know that you're kind of going through the same things, and that you know what they're going through, then you can give better advice.
Right. And for this programming cycle, I'm following the team's programming. And my mentality is, when I get through it, I was like, if I could do it, you guys can do it, because you're younger than I am. you're in a much better position to be able to recover from these workouts. So if I can grind through it and be okay, you'll be okay. Like, I don't really want to hear any like crying about it, because like, I'm surviving it. You'll be fine.
Well, and yeah, I mean, there's that, like, you know, I guess one of the, you know, military leadership values is never ask anyone to do something you wouldn't do. And, you know, that's why, you know, a few times a year, you and I do the exact same program as the rest of the team, because it's, you know, showing them that we will lead from the front. You know, it's like, no, we're doing this too. You know, I'm not just torturing you. You know, I'm doing it too. And I think that's, kind of important. Well, it's something that for me as a coach, it's important for my athletes to see, like, you know, that I do what I ask them to do. And if we're training hard and somebody's having a rough time, we're still having to do all of our outside of the gym things correctly to make progress and to stick with the program and to prevent injury. So if somebody's, you know, getting kind of worn down, if we're still training, we have that better ability to say, oh, well, have you tried this? This is a new thing that I'm trying. This is something that I've been doing for joint health. This is a dietary regime that I've been doing. You know, we can offer practical advice of what we found to be useful, as well as offering the theoretical advice that we get through our coaching education stuff, where, you know, there are things that aren't just, you know, or there's things that to us, because we've been doing this for a while, seem like really blatant, but remembering that we've studied this a lot.
Yeah.
And kind of, so keeping in with it, we know what we're doing all the time, so we can talk to them about, hey, here's what I do when my knees hurt.
Yeah.
These are the three things that I do, because I've been through that and I, you know, have, you know, sympathy with what you're going through, and I can help out when it's like, oh, what do I do if I'm not that hungry? How do I make my healthy food more palatable? You know, those sort of things are all things that we do because we're still actively involved with the sport. So I think that, you know, it kind of, it goes back to that building trust,
right,
where they know that we're not just spitting something out. We're giving them advice that we are also following.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. And like, for instance, you know, we're doing this squat program, and then, you know, we just started all this volume this week, and, you know, it's not a lot, but, you know, we're rebuilding.
It's substantial.
Yeah, it's substantial. Yeah. So, for myself, I took an Epsom salt bath, I stretched, and then I stretched, took an Epsom salt bath, and then I took a cold shower after my Epsom salt bath.
Oh.
And so that's how I recovered from yesterday. I don't feel as sore. You know, there's some parts that are sore, you know, they took quite a beating, but I feel pretty good. And so if somebody came up to me and said, wow, I can already feel the soreness setting in, I would tell them, I was like, well, make sure you stretch, try taking an Epsom salt bath, and rinse off with a cold shower. And, you know, if they listen, that's fine. If they don't, well, I offered them the same things that I did to recover from that workout. And that practicality of being able to offer that advice because I'm on the same programming that they are, I think is pretty invaluable. Because if they're willing to listen and I'm recovering well and they see me recovering well and I tell them what I did, then they'll make more progress too, because they're doing the same things so that they can get back in and perform well the next training session.
Yeah, so I think, you know, just being able to, I think it just all comes back to the wanting to offer good advice to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think can, you know, the idea of building trust and making your relationships productive can bring us right into our philosophy corner this week.
All right.
So what I want to talk about this week is lying. And I think that most people have an opinion that telling outright monstrous lies, as, you know, the head of a corporation, inflating numbers, or lying about your personal achievements are fairly disingenuous. But what do you think about white lies? When is it okay to lie to somebody?
So, if you think about it like this, if you're a black and white type of person, like, there's no right time to lie to somebody, right? So the problem with that is that little kids are like that. They're black and white. They don't know the difference between hurting somebody's feelings and telling the truth, right? So they'll say, oh no, that dress looks terrible on you, mommy. Or you know, they'll be like, wow, daddy's nose is really big. So like, they'll point things out, and they have no semblance of how that's going to affect you. And they'll just say whatever. So as we grow up, we have a tendency to learn to tell untruths to save a relationship or to for the peaceful cohabitation of everybody, right? So do I think it's the right thing to do? Probably not. But if we were absolutely 100% honest all of the time, we wouldn't be able to tolerate each other or get along. So there's times where it's important to tell the truth, and there's also times when it's important not to lie.
Yeah.
You see the kind of the difference what I'm talking about? So, I mean, like, what do you think about that?
Well, so I think that, you know, the flat position that you should never lie ever is, I mean, obviously untrue in some ways. Like, if the Nazis knock on your door and ask if you're hiding Jews in your attic, lie. You should lie in that situation. Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely morally acceptable to lie in order to prevent violence or in order to, you know, help somebody that's kind of in a perilous situation. The white lies is where I've been kind of torn lately, in that I heard some pretty good examples of this where we think that we're saving relationship by, you know, if somebody says, do you think I'm kind of fat? And, you know, by just saying, telling them what they want to hear, is telling somebody what they want to hear actually being that person's friend? Or, you know, if it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, maybe you could stand to, you know, drop a few, it'd probably be good for your health. Is that, that might be a little bit uncomfortable, but you're being more genuine. So, like, when you cancel plans with somebody, do you tell them, I just don't want to do that? Or do you make up a lie about, oh, I had to do this with my car? Because if you're lying about your interactions with somebody, and that person finds out, you've cheapened that friendship. They don't trust you anymore.
Right.
So, you know, where does that come in? Where, like, if you're late and you lie about what made you late rather than, I lost track of time.
Sure.
Or, like, I got distracted and messed around on Amazon. But you're like, oh, no, I had a tire go out and, like, there was a traffic jam. Is it really worth it for you to tell that lie? Is that helping anybody?
Well, the thing is, like, you, whatever you tell somebody, only you know if it's a lie or not. Unless it's something that they can prove that it's not. So, like, let's say you were running late. Maybe you took a nap and you overslept. And then you're like, oh, hey, I'm stuck in traffic. Or I had to go drop this thing off and I'm going to be late. And that person's not going to know the difference. They're like, okay, well, I mean, I'll see you when you get here, right? So to them, like, there's no lie. It's just what you've told them. The lie only exists for yourself because you know what the truth is. So as far as white lies go, if somebody asks you a question that is going to make the situation uncomfortable if they told you the truth, should they ask that question? I mean, because the thing is, like, you're putting somebody in a position where if they're honest, then you're going to be mad at them. But if they're dishonest because they want to save face or they want to have a peaceful relationship or a peaceful evening, then, you know, you've kind of put them in that situation. So, like, maybe they lie, yeah, but they're doing it because they want to keep the peace. They want things to continue to be peaceful. And so there's, the white lie is kind of one of those things where socially it's acceptable because, like I said, if your significant other asked you a question, like, hey, was that casserole I made, was it pretty good? And you're just like, you know, spoonfuling part of it and then spitting it out into the napkin under the table. And you're like, yeah, honey, it was great. Thanks. You know, you really, I know you were busy all day and you made it at the last minute and it was great, but it was actually disgusting. I mean, who's like, who benefits from you being, no, that was terrible. Like, it was garbage.
Well, so here's the other side of that is if it's, you know, say you're, we'll take the cooking example, right? So it's like, yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed that, you know, lying through your teeth because you want to spare their feelings, right? But here's the thing. If you lie, you have now made the potential for a future situation to be much worse when they make that again.
Right.
You know, so by saying, like, and being truthful in that situation is kind of like how we discussed in giving a correction for a weightlifting thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe saying the texture was really good, but I think you could maybe do more salt, or I don't really like, it was cooked well, but I just don't really like tomatoes. Now you haven't lied to that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little uncomfortable, but you've spared having to do that again in the future, right? Because if you get in the habit of like, man, I think those shoes are super cool, but you're like cringing every time that you see them, maybe if you, maybe they really don't see things the way that you do, you know? So maybe if, you know, something isn't a flattering piece of clothing, just be like, maybe try this one. This one, I like the way that one looks. And then you're not saying, I don't like what you're doing right now, but you're, you know, not lying. So there's, you know, how much, because, like, if I know somebody and I found out after, you know, years of being friends with this person that they had been consistently lying about changing plans or, like, maybe it's a meal that I've been cooking for someone for a long time and I find out they didn't like it, I'm not going to be thankful that they spared my feelings. I'm going to be upset that I was lied to.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, with the white lie, I think there are some situations where, like, I don't think it's lying to not respond honestly to the question, how are you doing? Because I don't know if you've ever tried this. I have a couple times, and it's pretty funny. This is homework for everybody. Next time someone asks you how you are, tell them how you are. They don't want to know.
Oh, no, they don't want to know.
They have no idea, but that's just how we say hi. So I don't think it's lying to not be like, I've been really depressed this week, and my back hurts, and I'm, like, really stressed out about this thing, and let people have it when they ask you how you're doing. But I think that trying to be more truthful with people, even if it's a little uncomfortable, like, if you're truthful with your criticism, people know that they can trust your praise.
That makes sense.
Right? Yeah, so if you're, if, you know, somebody says, hey, I like, had, what did you think of my last blog article? And somebody says, well, I mean, like, I thought it was kind of interesting, but you had, like, a lot of typos. If, as opposed to somebody you said, oh, it was great, and then you go back and look at it, and there's a bunch of typos, you're like, I know they saw that, and I know they just tried to spare my feelings. Or they didn't even write it. Yeah. So, like, it, is it, you know, better to tell the truth and have something be uncomfortable, but then people know that what you say is true.
Right.
So if you offer praise, you know that they know that you're not lying, because if you didn't like it, you tell them.
Yeah. It's just as genuine on both sides.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But so, it's really hard not to lie. Oh, it's so hard.
It really is. And
because it's so much easier just to, you know, try to make things less uncomfortable.
Well, maybe that's the thing. It's just easier, right? So a lot of people, and myself included, sometimes we just want to take the easy way out because it's just easier just to say, oh, well, that's fine, and it'd be done and over with, instead of saying, you know, well, I mean, maybe that pair of pants doesn't really fit as well anymore. Let's go get you a new pair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's, it, you know, what, to what extent are we, you know, like, where's the line between wanting to minimize discomfort, but then also you know, I think we all want to think of ourselves as honest people. And I think that trying to tell less white lies is one way that you can, like, is, I mean, I don't know if you've been in situations where you end up telling a bunch of, like, little dumb lies, like, oh, they were out of that, but you just forgot to buy it. Or, you know, these little things. I always end up, like, if I have, like, a few of those building up, I always just feel kind of gross about it. I'm like, man, I'm not an honest person. And I don't like how that feels. So I think, you know, making an effort to maybe not always be truthful, but to be more truthful.
Or to be tactfully truthful.
Yeah.
There's a way to approach it. Yeah, you can be tactically truthful. And in the age of social media, like, people will tell you something and then post on social media like, oh, well, no, I can't go. Like, my grandma needs me to come help her with her garden or something like that.
And then they're down at Sister Bar taking shots.
Yeah, they're taking shots like 12 in the afternoon and, you know, getting wasted, and you're just like, well, okay, well, I guess my birthday party wasn't that important. So, but yeah, it's that thing where, like, you tell somebody something, and then we're all connected through social media, and you see them, you know, posting something like, oh, hey, I'm going to bed, and then so you're up, and then you check something, and you're like, well, they just posted something like, well, you just didn't want to talk to me, like, or you were done with the conversation. So there was one thing I came across regarding that, and it was, don't lie to somebody that you don't intend to kill, because the truth will come out eventually.
Okay, that's a little drastic, but yeah, I like it. It makes it weigh on there.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think it's hard to be truthful, and it's certainly hard to be truthful most of the time.
Yeah.
But sometimes the right thing to do isn't the easy thing to do. And I think that we'll all have better friendships and relationships with our families if we actually are building those relationships on trust. Like, oh, I forgot to text you back. Not, oh, I didn't even see that message. It was, no, I read that and then I got busy and I forgot. I'm sorry. You know, that's a place that it would be really easy to tell a lie.
Yeah.
But just tell them you forgot. It's going to be better off in the long run.
Or just like, I didn't know what to say, so I just didn't respond.
Yeah, no, but that kind of honesty, it's, people are going to trust you more if you say the awkward thing of, I just felt uncomfortable, so I went to bed because I didn't want to deal with this. Okay. Like, they're going to be like, oh, well, maybe, but see, then that potentially solves a situation down the line where maybe they won't, you know, ask you those sort of questions anymore. Yeah. Or maybe they know that those things are making you uncomfortable. So getting it out in the open is usually the better way to go.
Yeah.
I will say, as one last thought, the radical honesty people who walk around and act like a toddler, where unasked and unprovoked, will say things like, you look really tired today. I don't like your shoes. Your tattoos are stupid. I'm just being honest. No, you're being mean.
No, people are assholes.
Yeah, they are not doing, like, so that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm more talking about trying to have more genuine interactions, not having a pseudo philosophy that enables you to criticize without feeling guilty. Because unprovoked, you know, character assassinations or, man, your taste in music is terrible. That's not being honest. That's being abrasive.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can get on board with that. All right, folks. That concludes episode 10. Thank you for sticking with us. If you've been listening to these podcasts, we're going to keep doing them, even if you're not listening. So,
all right, guys. Well, please, if you haven't yet, go on to iTunes and subscribe. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think. If you have any topics that you want us to cover, go ahead and send them to asaweightlifting@gmail.com. And all right, have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, y'all. Happy lifting.